Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Last of Us podcast. I'm your host, Albert, and we are going to be discussing the season one finale, Look for the Light. Now, you'll notice this episode is called Do the Right Thing. That's because we have an episode called Look for the Light, and it was co-hosted with Franco, who is one of our wonderful patrons. I wasn't to know that the eventual episode would be called or that an episode of the podcast would be called that, but all the same we press on. So hope this finds you all well. And yeah, that's it, ladies and gentlemen, everyone. Season one of the Last of Us podcast. I hope this comes through. So that's from our new little sound little switcher, Farago. So we're going to be incorporating a bit more of that. I wanted to kind of, I considered like torturing, playfully torturing some of the audience with the like clicker sounds just appearing in the background. But I think StreamYard still needs to sort of sort out its audio integration with like other sources. Like for example, I can't have like cool background music yet. As in, I mean, we could try. So, Last of Us, StreamYard, let's go. Wonder if that's actually even going to work. Maybe not. Because I had one preloaded here, but all I see is like a little circle. But the principle and the architecture of StreamYard is amazing. But anyway, folks, if you're listening to this, it's very likely that you've already. That's coming through nicely. Yeah, you've probably made your way through the Last of Us podcast, hosted by Steve, and also the Last of Us podcast, hosted by Troy Baker, with the after shows with Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann. And there's a number of, you can plan of funny doing theirs. You have, I think, three sitting people and various different. Find yourself here. Look, we really pride ourselves on our outside the box kind of discussion. And so, yes, if I end up welcoming some new people, then I would like to tell you about what we've been doing basically since 20. I'm just going to bring up here the companion. Constant presence and co-host is the IMDb page for. So, if you are listening to this on broadcast services, first of all, hello. Feel free to, if you enjoy the show, because we're still very early on into recording, but definitely, write a review. Let us know what you think of the show and how we can fine-tune ourselves a little bit better to suit yourselves. Who might be interested. So, anyway, let's start presenting the. But on the way to presenting, publicly, IMDb page, Michael, Andrew, Andy, John, Whitney, Doug, Robin, Mark. Very, very. Yeah, I mean, words fail. They're just the best, and they're over there on the top of the network. Lots of vibes, as you can see there. Different ones. So soon I'll have to update this because we've now completed our last of this. Again, we'll be going into the off-season. Mentally not leaving myself. And Albert is listening to this later. Hello to the one person that's happening. Yeah. Hello, hey, fantastic. I'm Mark, and that's what I mean. Hey, this is Mark. Yeah. YouTube.com/ Legion of Comics. Very strong name. That's one of our amazing MTs. Was one word over the waves. Now, what I am interested in later, sort of one thing that we've been getting a bit of feedback on with the, you know, the chime-ins on Instagram and stuff is, you know, some people leave video messages, the newly rebranded Spotify. Oh no, thanks for letting me know, Mark. Sad. Looks like I have to take that away. Thanks, mate. So apparently the audio is a bit choppy, so... how's that, man? Yeah. Too easy. Thanks, mate. But yeah, so StreamYard, not there yet. We still haven't figured out how to have just like smooth, beautiful background audio. But cheers, Mark. If you hadn't chimed in, we may have done the whole episode this way. It would have made it a little bit difficult to for others to hear. But that's all good. Thanks, mate. Oh, there you go. Smooth butter. But again, all over on, may as well just head over to this amazing fellow creators stream and channel and all his endeavors. You know, he's got a really good thing going there, so let's bring him up first and foremost for obviously this applause hopefully won't come out too choppy. I've listened back on the applause throughout the episode. Sometimes you'll have you'll have like It'll just be choppy when you cut to the applause, but when it's a clean transition, it's pretty good. Right there, that's who is in the comments right now. So currently sitting here with my wife and oldest watching episode one again right now. Wife hasn't seen it, mate. That is what a cozy little image there. So everybody collectively, whoever's listening, send Mark and Legion of Comics some good energy as they dive back into season one again. And it is something that because of all the effort that's been put into it is very much worth the rewatch. So head over to youtube.com/Legion of Comics. He lives up to his name, but he also has, you know, again, I'm going to be quizzing him about that because I'm a big King Kong 2005 guy. So really love that behind the scenes features for that stuff. So we'll definitely be bringing you on to the Monsterverse podcast at some point, mate. Well, enjoy, everybody. Let's give it up again for Mark from Legion of Comics. Thanks, mate. All right. So let's crack on, everybody. 10 out of 10 across the board for the season, for the show, for the effort, for this finale. It honestly... I was not found wanting at all throughout the whole show. It feels surreal. I remember telling Ray, my fiance, I said, there's a reality breaking quality to this show because it technically shouldn't go this way. Technically, when you adapt, you know, a work like this, or you follow up on an original work, a critically acclaimed original work, you know, now I'll be saying the Last of Us HBO effect, but I used to be saying, I mean, I'll still say it, but the Star Wars Empire Strikes Back effect of like the thing is better. You know, you've made a thing and then the next thing you've made is honors the original and is literally better than the first in essentially every aspect. I mean, you know, if you were to say which one, Star Wars or Empire, I would say Empire because it has Yoda and it because it expands the palette and the stage on which that story is being told. And the HBO series for The Last of Us did the exact same. It is telling it on a grander scale, on a more detailed scale, and it is fully availing itself of its art forms and leveraging the storytelling art form of the serial show. You know, it's perfect. So, and I think we're going to be hitting this applause button a lot, but yes, Merle Dandridge, everybody. Absolutely killing it as Marlene in both adaptations. I mean, I was messaging, I think I can say, you know, Elizabeth Grouillon, who plays the second sister in Star Wars. Because we have the Star Wars podcast right after this, actually. And she plays the second sister in Fallen Order. And I straight up said, look, not only let's get you onto the show like we did, we brought Daniel Roebuck on the show, who we were just watching Lost, Ray and I, and he plays Ernst, the, you know, spoilers cliche one for Lost. But actually, I won't spoil what happens. But yeah, let's just say he's on that show. So he's been on, and I was just messaging his castmate, Elizabeth, and saying, look, you could be the second sister. Like Marlene, sort of, you know, Merle Dandridge kind of shattered that ceiling, so to speak, of if the person's good enough at it, then just bring them into the adaptation. Because again, as this, you know, series showed, like mixing up, you know, let's say physical descriptions or even just sort of the alchemy and kind of chemistry of performance is totally permissible. So it is a show where there is going to be a quality to it when we look back on it of before the Last of Us HBO show and after the Last of Us HBO show. It definitely had that effect of yeah, shattering some ceilings, and my goodness. So yeah, I think again there's some great circularity of you know, Craig was mentioning this on the after show, of Ellie being such a chatterbox at the start, and Joel being the quiet, tacit one, taciturn, and then moving to the opposite at the very end. You know, all beautifully crafted works of art have a sense of circularity to them, and that's certainly what I found here with Bella and Pedro. Yeah, so obviously talking about like the formal qualities of the episode, we'll get around to that. But see what I mean? Like he's just in a better place, but it's you know, if you've seen the episode and you know, I'll do soft spoilers for part two. He carries this secret of what he did for a while, you know, and he just comforts himself as like, I did the right thing. You know, it was the lesser evil. Both actions would have been evil, but I chose the lesser one. And you know, yeah, some of the I think the PlayStation Beyond guys were talking about, look, to be honest, they didn't look like they knew what they were doing, you know. That could just be our, you know, you know, we're following Joel, so, and whenever we interact with someone, we never have like a pure objective empirical interaction. It's always filtered through what we're hearing and our headspace at the time. So it's like, to some degree, not to get Akira Kurosawa about it or existential, but we'll never fully understand what another person says, or we'll never fully connect with a situation as it objectively happens, because we're quote unquote trapped by our subjective experiences. But yeah, with this conclusion, that was the vibe. The vibe was yeah, Craig talks about this, that the limits of and the justification that we give ourselves to do quote unquote the right thing. But yeah, if I mean, as long as we're all going to be giving our opinion, which I'm sure we will be, is my opinion is, yeah, he did the right thing. And right is in like heavy quotation marks, you know, overall. And I think the IGN, like they have a headline that says like, Joel was right, mostly, you know, because, you know, and you could write a whole essay about like, well, Joel's theory there is like, not her, like, feel free with the next person you find who's immune to do this. And once again, I think Ray and I, when we were talking about it just after the episode, it was about communication. It was like, why didn't Marlene be less intimidating to Joel? Why wasn't there more of a dialogue? First of all, like, her, basically, yeah, I think I may have covered this in other episodes, but there's a big thing throughout this show of, if only they could have dot dot dot. And for me, you know, if only they could have, and we're forever separated from our perspective as like people who don't have cordyceps around and who aren't impacted as these people are impacted by their world. We're impacted by our own world, but it's not, doesn't have the same effect on us as on them rather. But yeah, what I'm saying is like, there's an impasse. There's a degree to which we'll never fully understand. Like, if the situation was that dire, then mistrust would have been ramped up so much that we're not talking anymore. We're not creating dialogues anymore. I have to assume that you'll be aggressive. I have to assume that you will be someone we have to like watch closely under gunpoint. And that assumption often is the thing that creates the monster in the first place. Like, if you've heard of the self-fulfilling prophecy, like if this, and again, it wouldn't be as dramatic and as poetic and as, you know, a great quality of art, which is the cautionary tale aspect. It wouldn't have that. But this is how it kind of would have played out. And why not? You can do some mind's eye cinema as I describe this. But the Albert kind of cut, like how Albert's, you know, probably wouldn't be, I don't know if it'd be on HBO or whatever, but yeah, this is how I'd go about it is, so cut to, you know, they, first of all, they wouldn't get knocked out. Like, that's just not a thing happening in Albert's The Last of Us. So these soldiers, sure, they make their presence known, but with lots of kindness and with lots of, hey, again, see how I'm already talking like, oh yeah, you're just a 2023 guy who doesn't see people murdered all the time or crazy monsters roaming around. Like, I'm speaking in a way that makes no sense for this world. Nevertheless, I'll just continue. So yeah, I would, on that patrol, the soldiers would like make their presence known. There wouldn't be any gunfire. They would just be like, follow us. Then it would be Joel and Marlene and Ellie sitting down and basically debating the ethics, you know? And yeah, they wouldn't, it would be much less action-packed, but debate the ethics. And frankly, there would be a component of like, well, let's just test her blood first and see what we can do with her blood first, you know? But everything in this show, again, for dramatic reasons, and also, again, not even for dramatic, but in a way that feels authentic to the world that they're in. Yeah, like, it wouldn't have gone any other way. And that's, you know, Ray and I had this when we were watching Chernobyl. There were some, you know, alterations made to the historical accuracy of certain components and some characters fused together, etc. But the overall sense was that that scene couldn't have gone in any other way, according to the honest lived reality and lived experience of the characters in that space that they were in, which gives these works like the Chernobyls and The Last of Us is this harrowing quality, this like inevitable quality, you know. Another one that has this for me is La Vita è Bella, you know, Life is Beautiful with Roberto Benigni, which I haven't seen. Gosh, I haven't seen for, I think maybe coming on 20 years again, because it's just so harrowing for me. It's too emotional of a story. But given the premise of that, you know, film, I can't see that character and that kid and those soldiers, whatever, having done what they did in any other way, you know. So, and that's again what makes this so, also this scene was so like heartrending. Let's also, because it is sort of, we're tying off like the on season essentially, there'll be some mid-season, don't worry, and it'll be about like reaching out to cast and artists and stuff like that in the off season. But but all I want to also kind of, in that sort of recap way, talk about how, you know, Ray and I, it became such a lovely like ritual, like on Mondays, like, and I call them Mushroom Mondays, you know. It was beautiful, and I often would turn to her and say, she would turn to me first of all and say, Albert, this is really, really good. And as someone, you know, we've been together just over 10 years, met her in 2010, got together in 2012, proposed in 2019. She said yes. And all throughout, leading up to, honestly, The Last of Us HBO, it really felt like I hadn't fully conveyed to her the power of interactive, you know, the art form. If you're wondering why I call, yeah, the I mean, I'll take myself off screen, take the, just while I do the search. So just as a little aside, and just maybe I'll review the article just to see if I, you know, because it'll all get explained here, but basically go Arts Hub and type Albert Kesser. I wrote a piece for them, called How Games Can Become Our Greatest Art Form. And this is, I'm just bringing up to reference certain parts here where I basically talk about how it's right there you go, Last of Us. So I talk about how it's possible in the ideal timeline from here, it's possible for us to have Last of Us quality games coming out like once a month instead of once every couple of years. And by that same token, to have Last of Us now, I can update, you know, I can't physically update the article, but I'll update the sentiment here to include, like, we can have this level of quality of a show every year, maybe even every 6 months if it's staggered and by different teams. And, you know, so Last of Us Part Two, a parable of and pay into humanity's capacity for both love and hate. So if you want to head over there and investigate just how much, you know, again, this is what the future could look like, you know, a harmonious multimedia transmedia approach, you know, and yeah, we're going to see some of this stuff from Avatar, you know, as they're going to be, and again, really has resonated with people around the world, just like Last of Us has, bringing in assets from the game and vice versa, you know. Yeah, so please do have a look at this one here, and it would be wonderful if one of the three timelines, because I basically envision three timelines from here. It's one, things are going really well and we are you know, we're trending more towards trusting one another with different adaptations, and we're not just and different new projects, and we're trusting the medium more to kind of come out of its shell. I guess I could do a little bit more reading just here, because I think it might be worthwhile depending on your point of view. So basically, here we go. So how games can become our greatest art form. So I am not interested in gaming. That might sound strange coming from someone who has every day for the past 25 years devoted endless hours to supporting, celebrating, being educated and inspired by the art form that happens to be at gaming's heart, interactive art. So let's start there. So just kind of giving context for why I don't use gaming so much. I prefer to just say interactive. So game, the name this medium still goes by today, is an objectively inaccurate description, a word that immediately conjures a child's toy or pastime, no less. I believe you would agree that naming an entire art form after a single genre within that art form, that being a title specifically geared towards recreation, distraction, and competition, is as absurd as calling The Shining a masterpiece of comedy or Blade Runner as one of the finest Westerns ever made. So it's just this strange use of this word, which really makes no sense anymore. You know, the earliest films kept their nascent, unproven and untested medium afloat by initially pandering to humanity's basest traits. Voluptuous women, muscle-bound men, exaggerated facial expressions, explosions, all forms of clownish and outlandish attention-grabbing hijinks, the Fortnites and the Fall Guys of the 1920s, if you will. So, you know, Buster Keaton, to some degree. Again, they did some more nuanced films, but than that. But yeah, it was lowbrow, but at the time it worked. But eventually, a film used the platform that it built with that era of its lifespan to shoulder its way upward past the ever-revered music and theater and TV. Ever-revered music and theater, taking center stage of the art form for crowds and critics alike. That's right, because TV came after a film. Its crass, basic, original form became an itchy shell, one which it eventually shed, leading to a surge of nuanced, timeless masterpieces created in the 40s and 50s, and in every decade since. So I'll pause here and mention that basically, video game films are. We can look at them as going through the same things that video games did, that films did, which is the early attempts weren't very good. And then later, this is also a theory of evolution, like later the thing becomes multicellular, it becomes more nuanced and more intelligent and more subtle and artistic and beautiful over time, you know? So that's happening now. And it feels like, you know, yeah, The Last of Us is this breakthrough species. I don't know, like a Homo sapiens kind of situation, like leaping from the Neanderthal to the Homo sapien kind of thing. So, and we all know how that went out. Like eventually we just stopped talking about the Neanderthals, or they just stopped being a thing, and there was legitimate evolution that happened. So there you go. So I believe interactive has now reached a similar threshold, just as film was in the 30s when vaudeville style antics began to fade in popularity, film eventually grew up. It is time for interactive to do the same. So then I talk about the presentation I gave, and, you know, same way, again, I'll just wrap up here before we dive back into the IMDb, but the same way you wish the best for, you know, like friends or your partner or whatever, you want the very best for them. So you encourage them to challenge themselves to become better. So I passionately devote myself to encouraging interactive art to step into its as yet untapped fullest potential. So I want this industry to go from, to continue its maturation and evolution, to go from pastime to art form, from dormant to dominant. So yeah, have a look at that one, folks. I'd be very honored if you headed over there and gave that one a look. Rightio. But yeah, so the conversation of The Last of Us for me is so wrapped up and tied in. And we'll have this again with when God of War comes out as well. So as in the Amazon series. So there you go. Well, folks, just keeping it a quick little brief one. We have some stuff to prep for. But I have been Albert, and this has been The Last of Us podcast. We're going to be diving into the off season very soon. So stay tuned to all of our social media, Topic Network, but also The Last of Us podcast pretty much everywhere. And we'll keep you updated. So this shirt also, a little preview, little tease of season 2. That's going to be fun. And 3, which basically 2 and 3 have been confirmed since part 2 is going to be what they're adapting and needs more than one season. So wink, wink. Take it easy, everybody. And until next time, bye for now.